Welcome to Solutions for Higher Education, a podcast by Scott L. Wyatt, president of Southern Utah University in Cedar City, Utah. To subscribe to this podcast, please visit www.suu.edu/presidentspodcast, where you will find both the audio and a written transcript for today's podcast. Hi again, everyone, and welcome to Solutions for Higher Education, a podcast featuring Scott L. Wyatt, the president of Southern Utah University in Cedar City, Utah. I'm your host, Steve Meredith, and I'm joined in studio today by President Wyatt. Scott, hello again.
Hello, Steve. It's good to be here. Always.
Yeah. I enjoy our conversations. And we've had a delightful fall, and we've had a delightful set of discussions that we've been engaged in. One of them, a series of discussions, has been about the increased interest in competency-based education and exactly what that means and how universities generally are coming around to that idea. How we recently had a group from our state office that talked a little bit with us about that. And we have a whole bevy of guests today. Bevy, is that the right word? A bevy, a coven of guests. No, that's witches. Anyway, a group. We have a group of guests with us today that are going to talk with us just a little bit about competency-based education, and specifically about a partnership that we've engaged with a local charter high school here in Utah. And so we're excited. Why don't you introduce our guests?
Well, thanks. Yes, we've got James Sage from the provost office, associate provost, and Johnny McLean, an assistant provost. So these are two of our really bright people here on campus.
Load-bearing employees.
Load-bearing employees.
Yep.
And from South Jordan at the American Academy of Innovation, which is a charter high school, we have the academic director, Ryan Hagee. Welcome, Ryan.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be here.
Let's start out by, we'd love to have you introduce your school. Tell us just a little bit about where your school came from and what your focus is.
Yeah, so American Academy of Innovation, we are in Daybreak. We are in our fourth year of operation, so we're a brand new charter school. The original conception of AAI centered on project-based learning and international partnerships. So we started that year one, kind of just having a brand new building, obviously, and we've been changing things along the way, and I think we finally settled on our official model, which is combining three different educational movements into a single head. And those movements are project-based learning, and that's put out by the Buck Institute, experiential learning, which SUU is very, very familiar with, and then the third component of that would be competency-based education. And that's a more recent development, but we kind of align those three things and have had really good success at attracting somewhat atypical student population based on those three things.
Ryan, give us the one paragraph introduction to you.
Oh, Renaissance man would probably be the easiest way to say that. I have been in education for 12 years, 10 years as a dedicated English teacher, and then 3 years. So my last year teaching, I was also the academic director, 3 years as academic director. I say Renaissance man because I grew up on a family ranch in northeastern California, a 4,000-acre cattle ranch there. I went to school originally to be a computer programmer, came back and went through, you know, the whole undergraduate thing. I graduated with 187 credits and then went into education and ended up getting a master's degree in gifted and talented education while starting multiple businesses. And so now I'm kind of focused in on this academic director thing. I still have a business up in Idaho that is run by a manager there. But I put my talents to developing the direction of the school and the academics of the school. So.
Well, thanks. And let's make sure that our listeners understand some of these terms. So you've talked about project-based learning, and that's learning that really isn't limited to a classroom or a textbook. It's kind of, you have to do a project. Give us an example.
Yeah, so there's the classic example. When people hear the word project, they automatically think science fair, and that's not really what we're talking about here. The whole idea of project-based learning centers on student-led inquiry, research, and design, meaning that you may pose this essential question, is what it's called, this big question, and then the students get to really dictate the direction that they take that learning from there. And the question is such that it can't be a Google answer, so there's no one side of the answer. There's some current debate on the issue. So a good example would be from our first year of operation, which at the time everybody was thinking about going to Mars. That was kind of on everybody's, in the STEM community, on everybody's imagination. So we asked the question, what would it look like once we got to Mars? And so the various groups took this 100 different directions. But some examples were, one group actually ended up designing and testing a rocket, and then did a live test with a mouse, measuring stress and heartbeat, and launched the rocket to 7,000 feet, measuring G-force and things. So they took it that direction. Another group looked at what would happen to your physiology and anatomy while on Mars, and what it would take, how many hours of exercise, and what kinds of exercise it would take to stay healthy in that environment. Another one, and this is the final one, this one actually ended up presenting at a conference down in Texas, but they built a life-size Mars habitation in our parking lot. So there's a good summary of project-based learning, but the whole idea is it's centered on that question, and then the kids kind of drove the inquiry from there. They did the research, they did the work, and they ended up in different places largely because they were interested in different things and pursued different avenues of research.
So what you're saying is that the students are getting similar or at least the minimum learning outcomes expected, but they're doing it in the creative way that they direct themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. So part of that process is the teacher kind of looking at what the project is and saying, okay, well, the standards, if you will, we're very standard-driven in the K-12 world, the standards that would fit this project are, and they enumerate those standards. And then those are the teachers then that have the feedback loop with the students as the project is developed.
You've listed experiential education as a separate topic. How is that? How would you define that differently than what you've just done with project-based learning?
Okay, so project-based learning, so they're related. So don't get too caught up in the differences. But the major difference is in the world of experiential education, there's a much heavier emphasis on the after effects of the work. In project-based learning, the assumption is that most of the learning is taking place during the project or during the experience. That assumption is challenged by experiential education, and we really value that reflective piece of experiential education where they're going through these experiences, but now there's the necessity to think back and then try to reapply in different scenarios. So we found that by combining those two, and project-based learning does have a little bit of that built in, but combining those two worlds, particularly with the Kolb cycle, was very advantageous for student outcomes. It led to better projects, and it led to more substantial learning in the students. So it just felt like a really natural fit.
As we like to say, you don't learn from experience, you learn from reflecting on experience. There's a lot of people that grow old and don't learn from what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And SUU has been on the forefront of that world for a long time. So we really admire the work that SUU has done and have modeled a lot of what we do here based on what we've seen SUU do.
And then you have competency-based, which is a method of assessing the learning.
So with competency-based education, essentially you're removing the arbitrary timelines from the equation. And I say arbitrary, that's somewhat of a... conflicted word. They're not necessarily arbitrary, but in the world of concept-based education, it's no longer necessary to prove this by semester end in our eyes. Like, if you prove it by the time you are graduate from high school, that's enough, right? The deadline is really the graduation and not necessarily the quarters, the semesters, or the years.
Yeah.
So you take that away, and then what you're doing is assessing that work on some sort of proficiency scale, and then reassigning that to what are considered larger competencies. So rather than just saying, yes, they're proficient in, you know, math standard 1.1, you're saying clearly they have a knack, if they're good at it, a knack for computational reasoning or something like that.
Well, Ryan, if I lived in your neighborhood, not 4 hours away, and if I had kids who were high school aged, I'd want them to go to your place. This sounds really exciting.
It is exciting in potential. We're still trying to work out some bugs. I'm glad that you feel confident about that. And we certainly have a student population who's confident about it. But we're learning as we go. There's still much work to be done in this realm.
Yeah, but to be a student at a school like that, where you're learning as you're going, what a rich opportunity for the students to see innovation in progress, not just to see what somebody has printed up nicely and handed to them. What a cool idea. Johnny or James, what do we have to learn from this experience that they're going through?
Well, we do have a lot to learn. I think that my main interest was we want those students at SUU, and we want to make sure there's a pathway for graduates from AAI to be SUU students and to honor the learning that they have demonstrated in high school. And right now there's not a very clear mechanism to honor that learning, and I think that's a good challenge for SUU to take on. But I think Johnny's also interested in this for other reasons.
Yeah, I think one of my main interests is seeing what we can learn from AAI and from Ryan and his colleagues about how to change a culture that has a long history of being held to these kind of terms, quarters and terms and semesters and years. And you know, how do we take our experiential education model that we've developed at Southern Utah University and implement this competency-based education model and combine those two? I think that AAI is learning a lot, and I think we have a lot to learn from them. So, Ryan, I'd love to hear some of the lessons learned at your institution about how to change that paradigm and that mindset in your educators. I imagine the students respond really well and really easily, but I imagine that the educators are maybe a bit more of a challenge, but I don't know.
We'll talk about the students probably a little bit later, but focusing on faculty, that's an interesting question. We've had a sifting process as we've gone through the years. And it's not an easy find to find someone who will not only buy into what we're trying to do here, but someone who also is capable of carrying it out on a grand scale. So I think my first comment is you really have to be selective in your hiring process. It's no longer just about discipline mastery, which was very much my experience when I was hired. They asked me several pointed questions about my discipline, and because I appeared competent, they decided that I was worth hiring. For us, the question largely shifts to relationship questions. We're looking not only for that discipline mastery, but we're also looking for faculty members who have the capacity to reach different types of students and lead different types of students. And that's become the focus of our hiring process now. And we probably emphasize that more than discipline mastery. So I think that's the first part. That's the first recommendation, if you will, is to really zero in your HR to try to find the types of candidates that would fit with a company-based model who are okay being on the edge, if you will, particularly in the K-12 sector, the edge of experience. I think secondly, building the culture institutional-wide has been a challenge since day one. I cannot, in good conscience, claim that we have completely succeeded in that realm. It's an ongoing challenge. I do think one of the crucial components is that this cannot be a top-down initiative. The teachers have to drive it. And we've found success in that model. Having the teachers understand the why, of course, is important, and the direction is important, but then letting them have voice, choice, and ownership of how this is carried out. In our case, what we did is we put together a team over the summer of five of the most influential educators here at AAI, and I worked hand-in-hand with them for several weeks over the summer, developing the framework that this whole competency-based education movement is based around. And because of that, when we came back and had our faculty training and meetings for the first 2 weeks before students came back, because I had their support, it became very obvious that they were allies. Like they were champions. They would take this and go to the rest of the faculty and help and explain and be patient and mentor them naturally. And I love that happened.
I think that's a really great point, and it translates to faculty at a university as well. Early adopters are very important to break down any stigma that might be attached with something, some new pedagogy. But in particular with competency-based, there's a lot of lack of understanding about it. And so we need to take things slowly and explain some broad concepts for our colleagues here. Some of them, certainly those in education, are very well versed in this type of, you know, proficiency standards mapping to competencies. But other faculty, this is a relatively new concept. And in our traditional credit-based approach, the seat time is fixed. Your 15-week semester is fixed, but proficiency may vary by student. Students may get A's, B's, C's, and if those letter grades are tied to their learning, then you can see the proficiency demonstrated varies, but seat time is fixed. With competency-based education, proficiencies are fixed. Everyone needs to get to a certain level of proficiency, but time is variable. So some students can get there in 4 or 5 weeks. Some students need 30 weeks. And it just flips the paradigm on its head. And I think there's a certain amount of letting go that has to happen by the educator to let the students direct their learning at their pace. The educator then becomes a facilitator rather than an expert. And that letting go means you have to trust in the evaluation and the assessment process rather than the inputs that the faculty member or the teacher provides. So you're looking at outputs rather than inputs. And that letting go is a tough cultural change.
That is a very good description. That's probably as good of a description as I've heard. Of course, you're a philosophy major. You get this stuff, you think. How does the geology major say it? Johnny's a geology faculty member, and James is a philosophy faculty member.
I agree with James.
I'm curious about this one.
So actually, Ryan, I have a question. Is there a sense in your faculty that you're forging ahead into a new educational paradigm, and is that part of the kind of excitement about? I guess, are the faculty feeling that excitement that they're up to something new and different and better?
We certainly tried to foster that. I don't think we have universal buy-off on that idea, but I do think that we are doing something very novel in the K-12 sector. I think that, and I think Utah is kind of on the forefront of this. And so we've shared all this data, right? So we partner with Mastery Transcript Consortium, which is a national organization that's trying to unite K-12 competency-based education schools. And their conversation with us was exciting and one that we passed on, just as an example of this sort of thing that I'm talking about. They essentially told us that the conversation we're currently having with SUU, they wish that would happen nationwide, but to their knowledge, nobody else is having that conversation right now. That quite literally, we are on the cutting edge of competency-based education in the K-12 sector, and that we have more and more substantial and more long-term partnerships than just about any of their other partner schools. So we share that with the faculty with the hope of them seeing, holy cow, like this is something that is not just novel, but significant. And I do think that has helped tremendously in bringing about positive change in the pedagogy of our faculty members.
Has it changed the content? So faculty in higher ed, I guess there are two sides to the coin. There's the content that faculty are trying to deliver and are trying to make sure that students learn, and then there are skills that that faculty are trying to provide opportunities for students to develop. And I'm curious, when we get into experiential education, project-based education, it seems like the skills are more heavily emphasized. And not that content isn't present, but I'm curious if this competency-based education model brings that project-based and experiential education emphasis on skills back toward content. Are you seeing that?
First of all, I appreciate the insight because it's something I've wrestled with as the academic director. I think initially the trend was to forsake content. And one of the challenges that we're currently dealing with is some of our faculty have viewed that the best way to go about competency-based education is to put everything onto the student's shoulder and to say, show me. And of course, as you articulated, that's not healthy for the learning, because there are absolutely critical understandings that are almost prerequisite to the skill. Take applied physics as a simple example. If you do not have the foundation of calculus, so really high level of math competency, applied physics is not going to make sense, and you will not be able to have the necessary skill sets because you're lacking in the fundamental understanding. So really, right now, I'm actually trying to rein back the overemphasis on skills and help people realize, help my faculty realize that the content is still absolutely necessary. The difference, though, is how the student demonstrates what they know. It shouldn't completely alter the classroom environment. What it should do is completely alter our assessment environment and the feedback loop. So it's not a one-and-done test or exam anymore. Now it's we clearly have what you don't understand. Let's take you from there and help you have full understanding. Hopefully that answers your question.
That's insightful. Thank you.
So I think this potential partnership that we've been working on for a couple of months now with the American Academy of Innovation faces a couple of challenges. So the American Academy of Innovation, based on experiential and competency-based learning, means that students may not be well served by concurrent enrollment classes. It means that students may not be well served by existing frameworks like AP tests that award credit, or even the ACT test, because this is not a full representation of the skills, knowledge, and abilities that the students have. So we want to create a pathway that honors the students' learning, at the same time, not just giving away credit, because that doesn't really set the student up for success. We want a faculty-driven evaluation of that student's body of work so that we can assign and award appropriate GE course credit. So I think that this is going to be based on something like the development of a portfolio, as well as a comprehensive transcript, the crosswalk between the proficiency standards and competencies at AAI and SUU's general education requirements. Now, that sounds simple to articulate. Say, we just need to have a portfolio, a transcript, and a crosswalk that maps AAI's competencies to SUU's general education requirements. But the actual execution of that is quite a challenge. So I'd be happy to hear from Ryan what your thoughts about how to navigate that broad structure to help better serve students transitioning from your high school to SUU.
Yeah, appreciate the opportunity. This is obviously something I've thought about ever since our first meeting several months ago. And I think with AAI, we have several of those challenges that become very pointed to us, and some questions that would follow. The first question being, for us, what level of proficiency merits a student portfolio and a request for a review? That's the first question that we have to ask ourselves, because that implies several other things, right? It implies that our proficiency scale is normed enough to be able to distinguish, even in its infancy, to be able to distinguish between a high performing and therefore very deserving student and a low performing student. So our first challenge is, I don't know if we have the necessary data to really make a reliability call like that. And our reputations are on the line, right? We certainly want to be viewed institutionally and as educators as being able to tell the difference between somebody who deserves consideration for college credit and somebody who does not. But I think the unique challenge is, we're brand new in this field. How do we really know that these competency measures that we have put heart and soul into are going to stand up to scrutiny? I think that's the first challenge. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. So we might have to adopt a mindset of being very iterative about this. So if we think of some proficiency standards for students in written communication, where we assign or we award credit for English 1010 and we place them into English 2010. Well, we need to track those students to see if they're truly successful in English 2010. And if they aren't, then we need to rethink our standards and the norming. If they are just walking right through 2010 and they're basically have the skills that a student would have at the end of 2010, then we might consider awarding credit for 2010 as well. So I think we need to start somewhere and then iterate and evaluate the evidence and always be grounded in what's in the best interest of the students. We don't want to set them up for failure, and we also don't want to hold them back if they're already quite capable. So I love how you were talking about it. This should be data informed. We need to study it, but we also need to take action. We can't expect to have all the answers when we launch something. We have to have, you know, a viable idea and then learn as we go.
Yeah, I think there probably are more failures in the world out of fear of trying and fear of failing than there are actual failures. People just simply feel like they have to have all the answers in the very first iteration, as you've discussed there, and we may not. We may not have all the answers. We may need to adjust as we go along.
Well, and it's nice to remember where the motives are. You know, Ryan, you could get paid the same amount of money and not have half the work, because if you're following the common pattern, it's simple because the path is laid out for you. But what you're doing is trying to reinvent something, and you're spending summers doing it, and you're staying awake at night trying to figure out. That's more work than just doing what everybody else is doing.
It's also more meaningful.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Oh, certainly. I can echo that. I think the ranch boy in me longs for that hard work and significance. So.
Public.
I will add just add briefly that our plan moving forward, just to try to overcome that obstacle, was to actually do a pilot with a couple of students who have expressed interest in attending SUU, and saying regardless of their proficiency levels, let's put together a portfolio, send it over, and they're going to be students there anyway, and just do some tracking with this preliminary iteration to see where we're at.
Yeah, we recently did that with we have a relationship with our local technical college, Southwest Technical College, and we recently had a group of canaries in the coal mine that went through that first group in a smaller fashion, so that we had a small control group and in our first iteration of the idea, and it gave us enough confidence to move forward to where we opened it up for every single student at Southwest Tech. So I think that's a terrific idea. The idea that we could have just a couple of students who were already planning to be here anyway, and let's see how they do. That seems like a sound procedural judgment.
Yeah, let's see how the G-forces affect them as they launch to 7,000 feet.
That's right.
Right.
Well, I really am a believer that this is good for the students to be so in the middle of these kind of experiments. They've got to come out of this with some positive outcomes that other students wouldn't experience.
I think one of the ways that this experience with AAI and this partnership will help us is on several other fronts having to do with competency-based education. So I just got done working with a group of six other partners on a $4 million Department of Labor grant focused on cybersecurity in two different industry sectors. One is advanced manufacturing and the other is clean energy. And these folks are looking at apprenticeship programs in industry. So if you have Seattle Power and Light, this is connected to Washington State University's energy program housed in Olympia. So Seattle Power and Light trains its employees on principles of cybersecurity, but it's not credit-based. It's an apprenticeship. So this consortium of folks writing this grant together, we're developing a way to allow academic credit to be awarded for people who complete competency-based apprenticeships. So if we learn about skill standards and proficiencies and mapping them to different competencies and then how to award credit for that in an appropriate way, that'll allow us to get students into our bachelor's degree for cybersecurity and on into a master's degree. So this is very translatable and transferable for my learning and for Johnny's learning, because we can serve more than just high school students coming from AAI. We can serve industry professionals who have 20 years of experience but no academic credit. And we can actually light up a pathway, like a runway, so that they have a way into higher education that honors their learning and their abilities. So I've found lots of parallels. And as I've learned from Ryan and his colleagues, I've been taking that into this other partnership and this other grant that we just submitted on Monday. So it's pretty exciting. And there are lots of other opportunities. We're biting off what we can chew right now, but the learning is going to be translatable to lots of other industries. And as a first generation college student, you know, I think about my family and that they work in their profession for many, many years, and they develop skills in management or accounting or, you know, all kinds of skills. And there's no mechanism for higher ed to award credit for those demonstrated skills. So being able to assemble a portfolio, being able to apply standards and then map competencies to college credit
right.
is a really transformative thing for higher ed. It really is innovative.
You and I, James, had this experience a little bit last summer, albeit in a slightly different fashion, when we were trying to translate clock hour to credit hour from our partnership with Southwest Tech. But I love these types of discussions where we get groups of faculty in a room and we say, okay, so we've been awarding things differently somehow. Ours is based on time. Yours is based on a different concept of time. Or in this particular discussion, ours is based on time, yours is based on competency. I think once we get people in a room, and especially if we can all agree that we have to feed them lunch while they're there, because that infinitely helps speed the process along. It's important that the faculty feel engaged in that process and that they see, as you say, that we're creating new mechanisms for the university to grant credit for things which are entirely credit worthy.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, and it all has to, it's all based on a shared ethos of what's in the best interest of the students. And that was President Wyatt's mantra when we were working on the Southwest Tech partnership.
Right.
And it's an ethos that I brought to this grant writing effort in Olympia, where I literally used that phrase when Tim Ball, the professor in cybersecurity here, he and I were there, and I said to the group, Tim and I come from an institution of higher ed where the ethos is what is in the best interest of the students, period. That brings people together, that shared ethos, more than perhaps any other cultural similarity, or we all root for the same team, we wear the same color on Fridays. If we are united around what's in the best interest of the students, then suddenly these boundaries drop away and territoriality.
The siloing that we find ourselves in sometimes.
And open-mindedness follows. And I think the kind of open-mindedness that the Southwest Tech Partnership has created, our partnership with AAI and Ryan and his colleagues, and you know, connecting with industry and apprenticeships. I mean, this is suddenly putting students first, and it's really exhilarating to be part of that.
It is.
Ryan, you're right in the middle of this charter school experiment in high school, but what if you were the academic director of a university? We would probably call you the provost. What would you be thinking right now? I mean, what would you be doing? What have you learned from this charter school experience that would cause you to see higher education a little different? Give us some advice.
Yeah, of course, with the underlying assumption that that I had a pretty good grasp of what was happening in the K-12 world, the thought that I would have is, here we have what we traditionally know as non-traditional students who have these vast skill sets in areas that are not necessarily directly related to a college course. So I'd be following, I think, a very similar thought pattern, like, how are we going to engage these types of students? Or maybe to James's point, how are we going to engage these industry professionals in the world of academia? That's a question that I ask myself even here. We tend to attract a population that is frustrated with the traditional model of education. That's just the nature of charter schools. And I think that trend is also a trend in higher education, so that consideration is a valuable one. There are many, many students in the world today, in Utah today, who feel very disenfranchised with the education that they're receiving from public schools and from universities. Bridging the gap between the K-12 world the higher education world and industry is paramount at every level. And I would be focused on bridging that in every possible way. And I do think, for what it's worth, I do think SUU is one of the front runners in that sector.
You've got a bit of an advantage that you're starting a school out of whole cloth, and one of the advantages that we have at SUU is that we have 120 plus years of tradition, and it's also a disadvantage because we get kind of caught. So sometimes ruts are wonderful things, and sometimes they're not. My mother grew up in a little community in southern Idaho that was a farming town, and it was a long drive till you got to the first actual town. And the story was, and I'm sure that it's not limited to Mink Creek, Idaho, but the story was, pick your rut when you get on the road because you're going to be in it all the way to Preston. And I'm sure that that's a line that people use everywhere, but ruts are wonderful, but sometimes they keep us from finding another rut. Johnny, what would you do if you were starting a university from scratch or leading innovation at a university based on some of the things you've seen at AAI?
You know, that's a interesting question. And I think all educators dream of doing what Ryan is doing.
Yeah.
And so I've actually given this a lot of thought, as I'm sure a lot of educators have. But I think that, you know, to some of what James and Ryan have been talking about, I think a combination of classroom work that is likely involving project-based and experiential-based learning and some sort of apprenticeship, some sort of real, you know, real employment experience would be the ideal combination. And I say this just from personal experience. I truly believe that I've learned more faster in my jobs than I did when I was in school. That doesn't mean that my school experience wasn't important. It provided a foundation, but the learning curve for me has continued to increase. And even today, I'm learning, I think, more and faster than I ever have in my life. And if that is the case, then if we stick with our current model of basically preventing students from gaining real employment experience until they receive a diploma, we are simply delaying the steepening of the learning curve. If I could create a school that's brand new, I would want to, at least in higher ed, I would want to incorporate some sort of employment experience. I don't know how that would be done. And I don't know if it's an option.
Well, we have several majors where a graduation requirement is some form of internship. We have a lot of those.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's not university-wide, but we do have a lot. In fact, I'm surprised how many that we have.
Well, I've shared this, I think, once or twice before, but it may bear repeating here in relation to what Johnny was just saying. So in my bachelor's and master's degree, I went to an in-state school. And as I was going there, I was a little bit of a performance prodigy, starting, at the age of 15, singing with orchestras around the country. So by the time I got to the university, I was actually working, professional. And I was shocked, Johnny, to your point, I was shocked that not only was I not encouraged in that direction, but I was actively discouraged to be engaged in those types of activities because, hey, don't go take this wonderful opportunity to go sing with this orchestra in St. Louis because you're going to miss your theory test on Monday. Well, there should be some way that we could help a student be actively engaged in the industry that they intend to enter, and yet still meet the demands of college. And that, to me, that's where competency-based education is such a wonderful idea. It's that we don't all have to take the theory exam on Monday. The time is not the fixed element here. It's the education part that's the fixed element. But I have to be honest, I've written tons, and President Wyatt can vouch for this, I've written tons of curriculum based entirely on the fact that the fine arts doesn't need to be detached from work, that you can actually create fine arts degrees that are occupational in nature. And it's entirely because of that scarring of my soul that happened in my undergraduate and graduate education. It was so obvious to me that these two things, which I loved very much, both. I loved the academic learning. I loved the technique. I loved everything I was getting from the university. But they not only were not helping me to get a job, they seemed to be discouraging me from pursuing those types of things. That's the kind of thing we need to get away from at the university.
They have the potential to enhance each other. If a professional experience and a traditional higher education experience are happening in tandem, each are enriched by the other.
Of course.
Well, and back on your level, Ryan, I took a daughter of mine, well, I've taken all my kids, but one example in particular, I took a daughter of mine back to Washington, D.C. with me for a week. This was several years ago. And her civics teacher said, don't worry about any of the homework. You have a different assignment from everybody in class. Your assignment is to write a journal about what you're learning in Washington, D.C. and turn that in. So instead of her bringing all these books and trying to study what everybody else was doing, she was given, the teacher seized upon the opportunity that would actually end up being quite meaningful for her.
Yeah, I admire that. Differentiation is the unicorn of public education. And I think with competency-based education, we are approaching it in a way that we can actually be successful at it. Because the only way to truly differentiate is to remove time constraints from the equation.
Ryan, any closing thoughts?
Nothing substantial other than thank you for letting me to participate. And I'm excited and eager to see where this ends up.
Well, we appreciate your engagement with us. We hope that the result of this is that we're better and you're better, and ultimately that it's in the best interest of students, that we find something that's special for them and we all learn from it, and it grows.
I'll echo that and appreciate your many insights and questions. They certainly helped me formulate our path forward.
You've been listening to Solutions for Higher Education, a podcast featuring Scott L. Wyatt, the president of Southern Utah University in Cedar City, Utah. We've had as our guests today in studio, Johnny McLean and James Sage from our provost's office. And we've also been joined on the phone by Ryan Heggie, who is the academic director for the American Academy of Innovation, located in the Daybreak community in South Jordan, Utah. We've enjoyed having Ryan, James, and Johnny join us. And as always, we appreciate you, our devoted listeners, for tuning in. We'll be back again soon. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Solutions for Higher Education. To subscribe to this podcast, please visit www.suu.edu/presidentspodcast, where you will find both the audio and a written transcript of today's podcast. The original music for this podcast was composed by Jack Barton, a master's degree student in music technology at SUU. For more information about Southern Utah University, please visit www.suu.edu.